ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Yushati
Navritta
Yogena
Virutha
Bodha
Svayam
Tad
Anta
Vidaye
Prabhatam Apasya
Pasyata
Yan
Yanna
Purvam Kalena Soja Purushayu Shabhi
Kalena Soja Purushayu Shabhi
Pravritta Yogena Virutha Bodha
Pravritta Yogena Virutha Bodha
Svayam Tarante Hridayeva Patham
Svayam Tarante Hridayeva Patham
Apasyata pasyata yanna purvam Kalena soja purushaya bhushi
Kalena soja purushaya shari
Pravritta yogena virutha bodha
Pravritta yogena virutha bodha
Svayam tarante hridayera vipatam Apasyata pasyata yanna purvam Kalena soja purushayushabhi Pravritta yogena virutha bodha Svayam tarante hridaye vipatam Apasyata pasyata yanna purvam Kalena
In due course of time
Sa
hi
Aja,
the self-born Brahma,
Purusha Ayusha, by the duration of his age, Abhipravritta,
being engaged,
Yogena,
in meditation,
Virudha,
developed.
Bodha, intelligence,
Svayam,
automatically,
Tat,
Antahridaye,
in the heart,
Abhapatam,
manifested,
Apasyata,
Sa,
Apasyata, did see,
Yat,
which,
Na,
not,
Urvam,
before. Translation. At the end of Brahma's 100 years, when his meditation was complete, he developed the required knowledge, and as a result, he could see in his heart the Supreme within himself, whom he could not see before with the greatest endeavor. Purport. The Supreme Lord can be experienced only through the process of devotional service, and not by one's personal endeavor in mental speculation. The age of Brahma is calculated in terms of Divya years, which are distinct from the solar years of human beings. The Divya years are calculated in Bhagavad Gita 8:17. Sahasra Yuga Paryantam Aharayat Brahmano Vipu. Brahma's one day is equal to 1,000 times the aggregate of the four yugas, calculated to be 4,300,000 years. On that basis, Brahma meditated for 100 years before he could understand the supreme cause of all causes. And when he wrote the Brahma Samhita, and then he wrote the Brahma Samhita, which is approved and recognized by Lord Chaitanya, in which he sings, Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Vajami. One has to wait for the mercy of the Lord before one can either render service unto him or know him as he is. So then this is the point at which the Brahma Samhita then was manifest. So this principle is there that the living entity wants to know, I mean an intelligent living entity wants to know the origin, who they are. The difficulty comes is that since we're coming from the Lord, one cannot know this answer through general speculation. One's own endeavors will not get you this answer. So this answer can only be obtained through devotional service. So here we see in previous verses that how Prabhupada is seeing from their version the broadness of devotional service. Is that someone is meditating upon the Supreme, whether it's Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan, it's devotional service. Is it said in the Bhagavatam that whatever you want to devote the fruit of activities, you want liberation, you want to go back to Godhead, it all comes from devotional service. So technically, anything connected to the Lord then becomes devotional service. But because it may or it may not be seen in that light, you only get how much you see. So, through devotional service and meditating upon the Lord in the Brahman form, the impersonalists get to the Brahma Jyoti, but because they only see the Lord as Brahman, they only get to Brahman. Right? But it's the power of the service of thinking of the Lord that gets them there. Right? Does that make sense? These are some subtle points. We generally don't think of it like this because it's much clear, especially for preaching, is that you follow very distinct differences, like Madhvacharya. There's two. Right? And so that means there's spiritual, there's material. And spiritual, by our definition, means us, and anything else is not. So it makes it very clear, keeps everybody clearly on the path, because as soon as you many times define these further finer elements, people get distracted, right? All other sampradayas are bogus. You cannot go back to Godhead. Therefore, spiritual means us, right? But people are going back to Godhead from all the sampradayas, but they're going to a different place, right? And if we don't distinguish what going back to Godhead means, then if we say, no, the other sampradayas are also bona fide, then we see devotees leave and go take initiation of the sampradayas. Right? Lack of discrimination. Does that make sense? Therefore, it's much clearer that it's just a clean break. It works very nice. For the neophyte, it's important. But we see for the Madhyama and up, it's not so important. Madhya means fixed, so it doesn't matter. They'll go away. It's just like, let us say someone is newly taken up some value that restricts them in something. Let's say they don't eat sugar or something. So then they can't actually tolerate that anybody else in the universe eats sugar, you know, or even that sugar exists. You know, it shouldn't be there. But someone who's mature couldn't care less. I don't eat sugar, I got my reasons. They eat sugar, they got their reasons. What do I care? Does that make sense? Those persons can preach very nicely and be friendly. Right? Does that make sense? Because otherwise you've got a problem. Most people on the planet knowingly or unknowingly eat sugar. So therefore, technically, then you're at odds with most people on the planet. Right? There's a handful that okay are careful, but other than that, you've got problems. So you can't actually interact. You can't be friendly. That's why I said the neophyte is not known for their great social ability. Well, the Madhyama is. Madhyama means they're friends with everyone. Neophyte means they're not. Right? Because of this point. But it works to their advantage because it keeps them in their own, world. And as long as that world is proper, it's good. It's progressive. Does that make sense? So what has to be understand is here is Krishna is so perfect. Anything connected to him is perfect. So therefore, using things that seemingly are imperfect, it still works perfectly. Does that make sense? So the neophyte mentality still has its advantages for the neophyte to advance. Right? Just like the Madhyama mentality has its advantages by which they advance. Then ultimately you get to the Uttama mentality, which then is the advantage how they advance. Right? If the Uttama uses the Madhyama or the neophyte, they don't necessarily advance. Right? The Madhyama uses the neophyte, it doesn't, right? He's in other words, one appreciates what's above, but one uses what where you're at. And one avoids, one tries to move away from the neophyte. The Madhyama platform is always useful for preaching. Even the Uttamas use it. Right? It's the perspective that they'll take. Realization is that of the Uttama, but their perspective, how they will view things, is that of the Madhyama. Right? So the Madhyama position is the most used of all the positions. Even the neophyte means we join Krishna consciousness. Even though we may be neophyte in our mentality, our realization, but the viewpoint that we take is that of the Madhyama. Right? Neophytes don't preach, Uttamas don't preach, Madhyamas preach. Does that make sense? So therefore, the neophytes and the Uttamas take up that perception. Right? Difference, of course, being is the Uttama, then their realization is so great that when that's applied through the Madhyama perception, it gets great results. Well, the neophyte, they take it, and it gets also good results. It may not be as steady, or as determined, or as focused, but it works, right? We see in the histories, we read the histories of the devotees, and we see that sometimes devotees, 3 months in the movement, they go out open whole yatras. Right? So that's a neophyte taking the Madhyama platform seriously, and they do great things. So it's the Madhyama platform that makes it work. So in here we see is that, but the driving force behind it all is devotional service. Right? Discrimination is made so that the quality of service rendered is the best. Right? But what you're dealing with, the situation isn't actually that important. It is important, of course, but what we're talking about in the ultimate sense. Because if you look at it, then, like you take Vaikuntha. Let's start a little lower. You take the material world. Material world, the situation is very important. Right? Like that, they say. In the words, famous words of Babu Ghosh, then, what was it? Situation Dekchi. I am seeing the situation. Right? So then, the situation, because that's what we see. If the situation's right, everything's fine. Right? Because we're basing our happiness on gaining what we want. having gained it, we call that happiness. Whether we're happy or not, that doesn't matter. That doesn't come into the equation. We got what we wanted. Right? Does that make sense? Because after having gotten it, then if we were actually happy or satisfied, why are we looking for then something else to get? Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, it's the situation that we're looking at, this element of sankarshan. So, because the element there, then reflected here, is the mode of ignorance. So the mode of ignorance is very plays a big part in our existence, right? Because you have to be ignorant to think you're God, to think you're the controller and enjoyer, right? To think that gain and safety is the all in all, right? So therefore, then the living entity being in that position, then the situation is important. Then why are people inspired to go to the heavenly planets? It's a better situation. Right? Even liberation, why? It's a better situation. Right? But in Vrindavan, it's not the situation, it's being with Krishna. Right? Because otherwise, Krishna's in Vrindavan, Vrindavan's nice. Krishna's not in Vrindavan, Vrindavan is not nice. Raghunath Das says that after the spiritual master disappears, then Radhakund, where he lives, instead of being something wonderful, now is like a gaping, you know, the gaping tiger of a mouth, you know, ready to devour him. So there's no joy. The residents of Vrindavan are taking no joy in Vrindavan if Krishna's not there. Situation does not matter. You understand? Affection goes beyond the situation, then out of affection you generate the situation. But generally what we do is we make a situation to generate affection. Does that make sense? Right? We make our house, we make arrangements. So many things we do hoping that that environment will generate some nice interaction, some nice rasa. Right? But in Vrindavan, it's the opposite. They already have the nice, that rasa. And so then they think, what can they do that will enhance that? What will go along with that rasa? Does that make sense? Okay. So, therefore, then, those from that realm, they see through these things, right? Means, as a general thing, when we're preaching, because we're trying to point out, you know, right, wrong, good, bad, pious, impious, devotional, non-devotional, transcendental, non-transcendental, right? Because intelligence is the only way to cut through the stubborn attachment of the mind to this principle that I am the, you know, controller and enjoyer, right? So intelligence is used. Intelligence means discrimination, right? What are the distinctions between things? So that is the main tool we use, so that's why it's there. But we see ultimately intelligence isn't what gets you back to Godhead. Right? Of course, real intelligence is taking Krishna consciousness. But what we meant, just the technique of intelligence is not the ultimate. Right? The ultimate is devotional service. Right? So we use our intelligence to see that we're always engaged in devotional service. Right? That's what we do. So we discriminate. But we see here is we're the only ones that can say stuff like this. Samadhi involves concentrating the mind upon the supreme cause of all, even if one is unaware of whether its actual nature is personal, impersonal, or localized. Concentration of the mind on the Supreme is certainly a form of devotional service. Right? Does that make sense? We're the only ones that can say that. Right? Mayavadis will say it's impersonal, the others say it's personal. Yogis will say it's paramatma. So if we see here, is that is the element of the Gaudiya Vaishnava, the Chinta Veda Veda Tattva, that is the specialty, is that anything is seen in connection to Krishna. Right? Vaikuntha means you see everything in connection with Krishna, but you don't have to go beyond basically rules and all those things. So even though it's already perfect, it's all connected to Krishna, one doesn't have to go beyond one's sphere. Right? But the Vrindavan mentality is such, it accommodates everything. There are those that try to make it super narrow and doesn't accommodate anything. But those people are not actually the residents of Vrindavan. Don't let them fool you. Right? They're not. This is the statement of someone from Vrindavan. They're concentrating on the Supreme. That's why they're getting benefit. Prabhupada even made the statement is that someone appreciates nature. They go out and such nice stars, or nice sunrise, or sunset, or this mountain is so beautiful, this river, it's Krishna. That's why they get benefit. Right? Example is given, sometimes the aboriginal people who live out in the wild and worship nature are very gentle. Right? As far as character goes, they're very nice people. Right? As far as the diet goes, that's another thing, but we're discussing character. Right? So the character is very not sophisticated, right? It doesn't sit like that. It's what you, but the thing is they're connected with God. But they don't know it. But it is service because they're appreciating God. Right? Does that make sense? Our view is much broader, but the point is if one broadens and doesn't use the discrimination, then one sees them all as equal. Right? But it's been pointed out that the Lord in the form of Bhagavan is superior to that of Paramatma, superior to that of Brahman. Right? God doesn't go lower than Brahman, because everything is Brahman. Right? Does that make sense? So we make that distinction. Therefore, anyone meditate anywhere, that's fine, as long as they're making that sacrifice here. Right? To cease from personal sense endeavors and to concentrate on the Supreme Cause is a sign of self-surrender. And when self-surrender is present, that is a sure sign of devotional service. Right? So in other words, when you're restricting your senses for a higher purpose, then it's seen as devotional service. Right? On the Supreme Cause. So that'll be Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So that's how they're advancing. So we don't have any problems with anybody. Right? We don't have any problem with the Four Kumaras, right? We're not saying, oh, those guys, impersonalists. No. From there, from that level of devotional service, it went to the next level. Right? Until it finally got to, means they see Brahman, then they see localized Brahman. Right? Then, after smelling the Tulsi leaves, then they took up Bhagavan. Right? That's how Ramanujacharya could take. He became one of his main disciples. I'm not sure what his name was. Someone may know. He was the wrestler. Who knows the wrestler? Was that Kuresh? No, that wasn't Kuresh. So this wrestler was first seen when Ramanuja was with his the Brahmachari Sannyasis, the Mutt. Right? So then the Muttwalas, then they were there at a festival. It was big, I think it was like Vaikuntha Ekadasi, some big festival where everybody comes out. So they're all there, and then they notice that everybody's looking at the Lord. You know, the deity is out on the palanquin and all that. But this one guy, you know, very, you know, handsome, very big, you know, qualified man, is there with an umbrella. And he's holding it over this one very young, very beautiful girl. Extremely beautiful girl. Who's that? I know that I'm talking about. You know the name of the guy? Everybody knows it's a prostitute. You understand? You have to know which to remember and which to not bother with. Right? So then he's holding over this umbrella over this girl. So then, and he's just looking at the girl. And they were discussing something about, you know, this festival is so great that everybody can, you know, get benefit from it, right? Because to see the deity, if you go through the gate where the deity goes through, then, you know, you go back to Godhead, all the steps. So it's a big riot on that day. Right? One day in the year, they open this one gate, and the gate is not big. It's It's about half again as big as that door over there, right? And you got millions of people trying to get through it, right? So, you know, definitely going to get liberated to get through that. So, and they're talking about this, and then someone makes, yeah, but everybody's going to get benefit from it except this guy. Like, he doesn't even notice the festival. He's only looking at this girl. So then Ramanuja says, no. Actually, he's a great candidate for being a devotee. And all the other, what do you mean? This guy is holding an umbrella over the head of a prostitute, looking at this prostitute. That's all he's absorbed. He doesn't even notice the deity. And how is it that this person is a great candidate for going back to Godhead? Right? So Ramanuja just says, okay, you watch. So he walked over to him, and he said, excuse me, sir. He says, everybody here, there's a big festival going on, and everybody's kind of like distracted by this festival, but you seem to be very focused on this girl. So why are you looking at this girl when this festival goes on? He says, I am a worshiper of beauty. This girl is beautiful, so therefore I'm appreciating this beauty. I'm just focusing on that. Right? That's what I do. I worship beauty. So Ramana just says, okay, that's fine. Great. So now, if I could show you something or some person more beautiful than this girl, would you worship that person? He said, oh, definitely. You know, it says, I just, whatever's beautiful, I worship that. So he said, okay, come with me. So he went in the temple, then he showed him darshan of the deity. Right? So seeing the deity, then by Ramanuja's grace, he could appreciate his beauty, and so then he became a great devotee. And then he was one of the main, this person would teach wrestling to the king. So he comes up in many stories. You know, in advancement of him and his wife. So then, it's always somehow, I know that his pastimes are always in, contrast to all the sannyasis and brahmacharis, always his pastimes. So then, so we see here's the principle of one is focused on the Lord, though he doesn't know it, and he's devoted to that. It's actually a form of service, right? That's why then someone, these great personalities, they see preaching opportunities everywhere, right? Because if we went by the definition of what we would say is needed for a practicing devotee, who out there could be preached to? Right? Isn't it? Think about it. Someone is not a devotee where it's extremely broad-minded. Anybody, it doesn't matter. They're breaking all the regular principles. Just they came to the temple by whatever reason. They took some prasad. They're chanting Hare Krishna. They help the devotees afterwards. It's great. They can wash the pots. They can do everything. They can be in the temple. They can do so many services. And everybody's enthusiastic and has great faith in the power of devotional service. Right? But as soon as they join, nobody's good enough to do devotional service. Think about it. Nobody's advanced. This person, he's going back to Godhead. Oh, you know, Krishna tricked you. You know, you're off the material path. You're going back to Godhead. You know, that's it. You know, material life's finished. We'll say all that stuff. But devotees, hey, you know, it's just a purely material, completely this, completely. Somehow that vision is lost between day one and day, you know, 30 years. What happened? But this is the vision. Connected in any way. Right? Some devotees, they said when they came to the temple and they were asked about the deities, and it says, what deities? You know, there the altar says, oh, I thought there was just some flower arrangements there. You know, nice. I thought there were nice flower arrangements, but they didn't even see the deity. They're in the temple, in the kirtan, they didn't see the deity. Right? Good. So there's something that's very special here that's being given. It's a viewpoint that everything is connected to Krishna, but there's gradations of the quality of that connection. Does that make sense? So that's important to be able to accommodate that it's all connected, but at the same time there's gradations. Right? We see Sanatana Goswami as the Acharya of Sambandha. He takes great pain to point out the differences, the gradation. And I think he gives 7 gradations. He gives right two aspects of his book, Priya Bhagavatamrita, where he's pointing out the different grades of devotees and the differences of the realms. Right? And he's trying to establish that Vrindavan is the highest realm and the affection of the gopis is the highest. Right? And that's appreciated by everybody. Bhishma Day, right? The last thing he's talking about is how great the gopis' love for Krishna is. Right? So even here, someone in the Vaikuntha mood, and in Vaikuntha mood in chivalry. Right? So he's out there, and first class arrangements for him is a bed of arrows with an arrow, pillow. And he is happy. Right? It fits perfectly. And he's talking about the gopis. Right? Everybody knows it is better. Right? In Vaikuntha, they worship also Radha and Krishna. Right? Some like that. Means of the 12 Alvars, 3 of them wrote poems about Radha and Krishna, about Krishna and Vrindavan. One exclusively. Nothing else, no Vaikuntha. And these are the Vaikuntha Acharyas. Right? So that be able to discriminate at the same and therefore to be satisfied in one's own position. That is a normal person. Right? This comment once struck me. I mentioned to others, sometimes it's taken well, sometimes it's taken not. So just to define, what we're trying to say is it is in glorification of Srila Prabhupada that this was stated and that we're repeating it. One time, one devotee, he was saying, says, been around, since so many people in so many situations, and Srila Prabhupada is the most normal person I've ever seen. Normal here meaning they're not insane. Right? Everybody else is to some degree insane. Prabhupada's the only one that's normal. He's a regular person. Everybody else is, neurotic, schizophrenic. Something is weird about it. Right? So that's the thing, is that Krishna and his devotees, they're the most normal, down-to-earth, personal people you'll find in the cosmic creation. Right? The most wonderful. Right? And then any of the Vaishnavas are the most wonderful. They can understand, they can accommodate all these different things, right? They're not the ones out there standing there in the wall, throwing the stones at the person who does the stuff they do, but they just, want to present that I don't do it, right? Isn't it? The easiest way to either cover up for something you're doing or something you did and you feel you've corrected yourself is to make a campaign or a crusade against anyone else who has anything near the quality that you have or had. Easiest way, it's the best smokescreen if anybody, most people know anyway, but just to let you know, those who haven't quite figured it out yet. Does that make sense? So, but they don't do that. Because they know, they can see the connection to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? But you have to be able to make the discrimination. That's why stories like Bharat Maharaj are given. He sees a soul in the form of a deer that thinks it's a deer. It's a baby deer. Baby deer is like their mother. Right? Mother's gone, so it needs something to be taken care of. So therefore he takes care of it because that's what the deer thinks he is. The soul thinks he's that. He just sees the soul. But they're becoming attached to dealing in that situation, then a mistake is made. But he didn't make this mistake from the platform of the conditioned soul. This was made from the platform of the liberated soul. Right? Does that make sense? Therefore, the fineness is given is that all these things are there, but this view of the Brahman, where does Brahman manifest? It doesn't manifest in the spiritual world. Right? Right? Does that make sense? Material world is Brahman. So that absorption in Brahman, then if it's not taken to the personal, will keep you here. But at the same time, it's the tool to get you out of here. By seeing everything here as Brahman, then you free yourself of the material identity. But unless you see Krishna as Bhagavan, you won't get yourself into the spiritual world. So that's real liberation. Getting out of the material world is only half of it. Getting into the spiritual world is the complete. Right? Does that make sense? So then that's the point, is that to be able to have the broad-mindedness that the scriptures give, there's nothing more broad-minded. You take the most respected, upstanding, practicing, liberalist person on the planet, they have no comparison to the broad-minded liberality of the realized Vaishnavas. And I make that point very strongly. Right? I'm just going to leave the emotion out of it today. Right? Otherwise, I lose people in the class. Okay? So, does that make sense? There's no one as broad-minded as the Vaishnavas. Unfortunately, Vedic has gotten the ideas very narrow, but that is the mentality of narrow-minded people. Right? You can be liberal and be very narrow-minded. You've just moved your keyhole from right to left, but it's still a keyhole. Right? Does that make sense? You're still looking through a keyhole. Right? Vaishnavas are the most broad-minded. They can accommodate anybody, right? Devotees would have tossed the drunk out of the temple, right? But the Prabhupada didn't. And so the drunk comes in, gives a roll of toilet paper, right? Devotees, what are they going to do with toilet paper? Right? At least the boys, what are they going to do with it? So then, you know, they can say, a drunk's coming in, give me his useless toilet paper. What's going on? Prabhupada sees devotional service. That drunk wouldn't know what devotional service is. They came up, you know, and slapped them in the face. He wouldn't know. But he did devotional service. Does that make sense? That's their vision. This is not sentimental. It's not just, oh, let anyone do anything. You know, like we have the thing of, you have an installed deity and, oh, let the kids bathe it or worship it. That's useless sentiment. The kid won't advance, you won't advance. The deity's thinking, why did I even come here to get installed? Right? If they're going to do this, what do I need to be installed for? Right? Does that make sense? That's sentiment. We're not talking sentiment. We're talking a broad perspective that is based on the sentiment of love of Krishna. And see, if you love Krishna, you have to love. If Krishna is everything, that means if you love Krishna, you have to love everything. Right? That doesn't mean the concept of, okay, we love everybody and everybody's God, so therefore the dog is God and the God stole my chapati. Wait, dog, you know, please, some ghee for your chapati, you know. No, not like that. That's why the acharyas give us a very specific perspective to view from, right? You can view the whole cosmic creation, but you have to view it from one point, right? 1/10,000th the tip of the hair is a pretty small point. Right? And from there you can look at the rest of it. So the perspective needs to be right. Otherwise it will be sentiment, or it will be, you'll either get sahaja or smarta. Right? And just because sahaja is taken out of the Vedic into the modern and is considered politically correct doesn't make it any better than the sahajas out there with the long hair and the pot and red mouths from eating pot. No difference. It's just as bogus. Right? Sorry, we're using the emotion there. Does that make sense? So the whole point is there is a specific vision that encompasses everything. You get it right, you go back to Godhead. You get it wrong, you stay here. That simple. So the Acharyas are trying to teach us how to get it right. Right? And that means we're broad-minded, but based on Shastra, and based on how to view the Shastra from the viewpoint of the Acharyas. That's broad-minded. Right? Technically, nothing else is broad-minded. It can be a part of this broad-mindedness, therefore it has some good qualities, but it's not the complete broad-mindedness. Is there any questions on this or comments?
Wait.
Can you make the announcement when we finish the class? Because I'll finish the class in 2 minutes. I know the one person is very, very sick, but you can't wait 2 minutes. Okay, so let's do this. We'll do this. We'll end the class here, and then you make the announcement. Okay, so we'll end the class. Okay. So please, now the announcement. I'll make
But the announcement is, thank you very much to all the devotees, because you are helping, the majority you are helping, to the Guna Prabhu, me also, I am making something. But we have now one Mataji who is very, very sick, that they operate in Calcutta, because we have one cyst in the brain, and we need help. This Mataji is Rapali, the sister is here, Sri Krishna. Entonces, she is alone in the hospital. She has only the husband. Ali Krishna is taking care of all the children. She has 4 children. Entonces, if somebody go to Calcutta or somebody can help, because she, the husband is alone, and they are taking so much money, or he can pay, and he must go to England for work. Entonces, he cannot left alone the wife for one side, for another side, he cannot not go to England because he must work for pay the hospital. Entonces, please, if somebody can help to grow up on it, Mataji, Ali Krishna, see, Ali Krishna, please. I think I see it. If somebody can ask where it is, in what I can help. So many times we go to Calcutta for something no important, and we can go to the hospital and help something to the hospital, no? No, I don't know.
Gruntaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Sahadita Bhakti Vrinda ki, Chaita Dai Gaura Prema ki. Gets there. I'm just saying is that the one is so perfect that it fits everything. And the other one, when they start the other way, and go the other way. That makes sense. So you did something yesterday? You cooked in that? Yeah, so I'm saying it's pretty good. They got two in a row. So. So you have to work it out with a lot of Gauranga and with the boys, is that we want to do it on Saturday. That's the proper day to do it. But we have to be able to, let's say, take prashad by 12:30. You know, 12:30. So that would mean as they do the yajna, then maybe take some, you know, like yellow mudi, the dry mudi, do something like that, and immediately start in the kitchen. So we can end everything early. Because one is you have the elephant procession, and two, Mataji also has to get back. She's running the whole school. So she leaves her school to come over here for these yams, you know. So like that. You know? Does that make sense? So something has to be worked out, and the boys have to be a little quicker rather than they all come in the kitchen and then stand there and watch. And then you say, get this, and then they get that, and then, okay, then, you know. You know what I'm saying? It's like brain should be used that hot, dirty, out of kitchen, two pump, wash, after washing, bring back to kitchen or put away, rather than take that pot, okay, I got the pot. No, take it to the pump, okay, I got it at the pump. No, you're supposed to wash it at the pump, okay, it's wash at the pump. No, but it's still at the pump, it's supposed to be put away. Okay, I put it away. You can let go of the pot now. Oh, okay, I let go of the pot. You know what I'm saying? They should have more... It should be, they know what to do and do it. The boys have a very regulated program. It shouldn't be difficult to figure it out. You know, because then they can learn and do so many nice things. Like, we cooked in 1 hour. But it was, I think, an hour or more after the cooking that they finally ate. And there's double the boys we had before, and the pots were washed in double the time. Is that how it works? So it means when we have triple the boys, it takes three times longer to wash the pots? There is a saying, one boy is a full boy, two boys is half a boy, and three boys are no boy at all. So I guess maybe they're working on that principle, right? So, like that, is that they should understand is that they're trying to learn to do things. If they can cook on time, wash a pot on time, and do these other things on time, you can do anything on time. You want to run a business, you want to manage, you want to do a yajna, you want to... You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of appreciating what's going on and where they're trying to go with it. You know, then it'll work for them. Because the point is it should be, is because there's more kids now. It only takes the same amount of guys to do the same cleaning as before. That means other kids could be there, like we used to do, and cleaning the kitchen while it's going on. So when you finish cooking, basically the last pot's all that has to be washed. And other guys then are already set up the place and everything like that. So then it's just a matter of, at least in this case, like just sitting down and eating. You know, so then it'll work nice. Then they'll find it's nicer. If you can spend 2 hours in the kitchen and cooking and eating, it's nicer than spending five and only doing 2 hours work. Does that make sense? So it's something to discuss and work out so that everybody appreciates it and everything like that. So you get more done. Right? Plus, if you eat earlier, then that means that you have time to do something else, like play or something important, you know, to protect that. You know. Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. That's all. Pretty good crowd. Yeah, okay, so we'll go to questions now. Probably come over and shave and stuff like that.
What's
that
question?
Well, is it something we can answer in general?
Sorry?
Is it something we can answer in general?
It's from the verse.
Yeah. Okay, so okay.
So just like sit and
ask. Because now we'll ask a question.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just general, because most people don't want to stay in, but they'll always come in. We split it so they don't feel obligated to stay where they want to go, so then they're not going whoever wants to stay stays. Okay, so what's your question? Right here, he's got another one. It says 100, well here, yeah, so it says here 100 years when his meditation was complete. And then it says, and Prabhupada in here is calculating Divya years, which are distinct from solar years, and he's talking Brahma's day. So it can mean that that's the point being brought out, so then Brahma's day is being brought out. At the same time, it can be that it's discussing the Divya years according to the demigods, which means 100 of the demigod years. But in any case, it doesn't matter, because basically this is all preliminary to what's happening. So once the creation is there, then he has his 100 years. So you can see is that he had to put in 100 years of meditation to then be able to function his other 100 years. So then, you know, then he's the original bicentennial man, right? So then, nothing new, right? Like that. It's also interesting, here's how he got his four heads, as he was trying to figure out. So he's looking in all the directions, so he got four heads from that. So that's how our Brahma got. And other times sometimes he gets four heads because of Tilotama. She's a real head spinner, that one. So, you know, it means everybody else, all the other demigods, just watch her as she walks around like that. But, you know, the more dignified, they just sit in one place. And as she walks around, Brahma made, you know, a head on each side, you know. And Shiva did the same thing, you know, like that. I guess one extra one on the top. And Indra then manifests 1,000 eyes, so you can look at her from every direction. So that's another way everyone got their head and eyes. So. Right. I mean, something is there to look at, so they get more heads and eyes, but how it happens, so that's another thing. Difference between someone who's appreciating the beauty of nature and someone who appreciates Krishna's beauty in that nature. So it just depends upon what aspect of Krishna you're thinking about in connection with that. Because looking at the beauty of nature, then the medium is Brahman. So if it's just the potency of the Lord, then it's Brahman, it's personal Brahman. So one will, it's devotion, so one will continue like that. One will. The one who then sees it is localized as Paramatma, then will continue. But one who then from that then sees the personal form, like the gopis, then it moves to that realization. So in any case, if it's someone who's a devotee and knows it's Krishna, it means that they know it's devotional service, then for them, then they will progress until they come to the that Bhagavan stage and they perfect that. It's just that those who don't know, then they'll only get however much they want. Sixth Canto gives a point of this. Anybody who is in any position in the world, you know, born in an aristocratic family or a nobility like this, is only because they've done devotional service. So that means they perform the pious activities, but they don't know it's devotional service, so the result is not coming in that form. Right? So then they're born in aristocratic families and things like that. Does that make sense? So, but the point is to be able to make the distinction between them so that one progresses nicely, one doesn't get stuck, right? Okay, Krishna is in nature, so therefore now it's not our service to go out and just appreciate nature. No, because we have the opportunity to do more direct service. You know what I'm saying? Therefore, it's, you know what I'm saying? That would be preferred. But we're saying someone who doesn't know anything, they just like to go out camping and be in nature and appreciate nature and all that. That's generally why those persons have a little bit more developed consciousness, simply because of that appreciation. They just go out in nature and don't notice it. You know what I'm saying? Just like you have somebody growing up, you know, in the, the Bronx, okay, in New York, most people don't notice anything, so they stay there. Some people notice the human element or something else, that's something where they can identify a potency of Krishna and appreciate that. They're generally the ones that progress and move forward and become something in society. Does that make sense? Like that, because they've appreciated that. Right? So that's why even appreciating the good qualities in devotees is considered to be a benefit. Right? That's why we see in, you know, like in the Dwarka pastimes, so much, or Vaikuntha pastimes, so much is pointed out on the nice arrangements. Nice arrangements, the beautifulness of it, everything like that. You know what I'm saying? Even society girls, it's like they're part of the scene because they add to the beauty of it. You know what I'm saying? So then it's nice. So it's all connected to devotion. It's all connected to Krishna. So it works. Right? But you have to be very, very careful to not take a portion and try to claim that it's the whole. That's why then, as soon as someone does, then we just go, that's mine. That's material. But just a minute ago, you're saying it's devotional service. It says, no, it's material. Because devotional service, then, is anya-vilashita-shunya. Right? So in other words, if someone's misusing the broad-mindedness, then we're very, very conservative. But if there's not going to be a problem with that liberal view, then we can extend it as far as needed. Right? But as soon as it's taken advantage of, just like if someone takes advantage of our conservative position, we immediately take the liberal. You know, oh, you know, this person, you know, missed three Mangalartiks, and, you know, they can never be advanced, and they can never like that. It's just, no, but it's, you know, it's the devotional service, it's that thing, what's wrong, why didn't they come, what's it, you know, like that. You know what I'm saying? And if someone is saying, it doesn't matter, I go to Mangalartik, I'm a devotee, I remember Krishna, then it's, no, we have a process. Regulated, Krishna says, steady, regulated devotional service, then he's pleased. You know what I'm saying? In other words, we're trying to stay on the middle. So as soon as someone goes too far to the right or the left, immediately we say the opposite. That's why it appears that it's so confusing. That's why devotees with less faith are disturbed by the principle that we can take any verse and prove anything from it. They're devotees, you cannot quote Shastra to them. They won't buy it because they can say, you can take any side with it and prove anything, so therefore we don't deal with it. Right, and only take what comes out of these magazines, some magazine or something, you know, like that. They hear it on the air, just something that's popular. You know, what's politically correct. You know, what's their own emotions and logic can relate to, and that's it. So they only trust themselves. They are the standard. They are the judge. But at the same time, is they're not fixed. So therefore, you know, in their liberalness, then they can't even take a stand, so therefore then they end up having to move their position or, you know, make a fool of themselves, give up their liberality. You know what I'm saying? So, because the proper discrimination is not there. Does that make sense? So one has to be very, very careful, because we can take this thing like this and speak to the most liberal, most accommodating, but as soon as someone takes advantage of it, boy, we slam the door so hard you won't know what happened. Like that. And we don't care if your foot's still in it. You know. The door will be shut. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the thing, that's the balance, is that it's able to accommodate all aspects and find what is the best situation for devotional service. That's why you see Prabhupada could accommodate. Devotees are hopping over the wall, stealing flowers from the graveyard for worshipping in the temple. It works. But if we say, okay, that's our ISKCON standard, then it's nonsense. These are flowers from dead people. We can't use those. That's why you can have any of these, so many of these points, and get devotees, you know, very rabidly on two sides over the same point. Right? You know, it's not just us, the Ramanujis, they're the same. The Wadagalai, Tengalai, they hate each other. They don't like each other. They won't even marry each other's families. Right? The way they dress, the way they eat, or their marriage somewhere, everything's different, you know? Like that. It's just the way they are. It's just the same thing. They've taken one point of Ramanuja and looked at it from 180 degrees of each other and made two different camps. Because the point is it depends on the application. The person's in that situation, in the right mood, it's applied in one way. They're not in that mood, it's applied in the opposite. So that's why both sides are actually correct. But what neither of them are taking into consideration is the time, place, and circumstance. Right? In other words, they're looking at the form of it, but neither of them can apply it because they're not taking into consideration time, place, circumstance. Time, place, circumstance is the verb. Right? So that's the whole point, is the Vedic situation is the working of the verb. Verb is the center. Vedic language comes from the verb. Right? You have an idea, but your idea is an experience that you want to generate. To generate that, you have to have nouns, and you have to have the verb to organize, it means make the nouns interactive. Then only you get an experience. Does that make sense? So verbs are first. When the sound moves up, when it hits the third chakra, right, then it's a verb. Because what you want to get done and want to experience from the activity, when it gets to the heart, then it becomes the nouns that are necessary to get it done. Then when it comes to the voice, then it's projected. Does that make sense? So that's the working system. One has to, means, in other words, with maturity, one has to look at this. This is, Bhagavatam is, Vyasadeva's writing in his maturity. So therefore, one has to be very, very careful. We're not saying now, oh, the impersonalists are great devotees, and therefore, no. They're not devotees, but they're rendering devotional service. But it's called the Jnana Sukriti. And it's only because of that they're getting liberation. Right? The person is appreciating beauty, he's a greenie, he's working for a green planet, like that. So he's performing devotional service in one, from that aspect. But it's only a Jnana Sukriti. So what does he get? He just gets a little bit of piety, that's all. So that's the point, is you have to be able to discriminate. That's why we can say it is devotional service. In other words, it's powered by devotional service, but because the person is not in devotional mentality, it does not have the effect of devotional service. In other words, there's only devotional service going on in the cause of creation. Just we're too much of an illusion to notice it. That's actually what's going on. Right? Krishna is the ritual. He is the fire. He is the ghee. He is the chant. That means the whole thing is just worship of him. But the person thinks he's worshiping the demigods and therefore not. Or we're doing the worship and just absorbing the technicalities of it, so we don't get that much benefit. But even the karmi, straight, you know, hardcore karmi, that is following the Vedic rituals, it's still Krishna. And even if he's not following the Vedic rituals, anything can function outside of Krishna's law. Right? Right? In the marriage, there's the mantra, the Kama Stuti. Love has come from, you know, love is going to love. Love is coming from love. You know, love is giving unto love. Who is the giver? Where is it? Like this. This is all it's talking about. So most people think, oh, it's sentimental nonsense, you know, shloka. Let's take it out of the wedding ceremony. We're Gaudiya. We're Vaishnavas. We don't care for that. We're strict. But the point is where did it come from? Affectionate attachments come from Krishna. It's going to Krishna. Right? Right? Male means this body is us? No, it's being empowered by Krishna's universal form. So the male is Krishna, the female is Krishna. They're interacting, it's coming from Krishna, going to Krishna. It's actually just Krishna's pastime going on. Male, he's just interacting with Ramadevi, that's all. But we think we're the man, we're the woman, we're the one, we're in love, we're doing all these nice romantic things, you know. Or I'd say, okay, let's drop the romantic, that's a little old-fashioned. You know, we're doing all the, you know, good stuff, you know, whatever. So then, therefore, you know. But all that's going on is the Lord in His pastimes with the living entities. The living entities are so foolish they think they're functioning outside of Krishna's pastimes. Because as soon as, oh, it's pastimes, then it's okay. No, it's not okay. You know, that Krishna's there, but your involvement, then if you're actually devotional and you want to please Krishna, then why are you doing what you want to do rather than what the Shastra says? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Like that. So it's there. What Krishna means, everyone follows my path. It's there. It's just a matter of which way you're going on the path, that's all. Right? You know, some follow it and then they go, you know, like that. So, in other words, if it's progressive, it's nice, you're going forward. If you're not, you're going backwards. But forward means how far forward? Right? You know, just to be a nice guy forward? Right? And nice guys finish last, so after a while they get annoying. Right? And so then they start to become sinful. Right? Then they start going the other way. Then they get tired of just being harassed by material nature. Then they decide to become good guys. So, in a very small thing, they go, if they're pious, they follow Vedic, they go up to the heavenly planets and back. Jnanis go up to the Brahman and back. Right? But you go to Vaikuntha and you don't come back. Better program. You know what I'm saying? So, in other words, to be able to use the intelligence on both sides and be very, very careful that the mind doesn't catch something and make its own bogus religion out of it. Like that. Does that make sense? Who? Bharat Maharaj, yeah. No, because it's all devotional service to Him. He's seeing the soul, just the soul. The soul in the deer's body thinks it's a deer. So therefore, you deal with it as a deer. Right? That's Varnashram. Right? Who are you? Who is the other living entity? What do they think? And how do you deal with them? That's Varnashram. So therefore, he's dealing with them as a deer, and this is a child deer, and they need a mommy. So then he's doing those duties. So that's not the problem. The problem is then he gets worried about the deer, and to the point where he's not careful, right? He lets that worry take prominence. So therefore, he's not careful. He fell off a cliff, right? It means he's lived in the area. He knows what's around there, so how is it that he missed that? So that's where. It's that it became too prominent. That's why this distinguishing is there. You know what I'm saying? Prabhupada can say, you know, within a 10-mile radius of any big temple, you know, nobody should go hungry, because if need be, we distribute prasad. Because he sees that they're performing devotional service. It's unknown, so it's a gyatra sukriti, right? So, depending upon how you're defining devotional service, you could say a gyatra sukriti taking prasad is devotional service, or you could say it's not. Both are correct. Because they don't know, it doesn't end up as devotional service. They don't get that. It takes them a step towards taking up devotional service, but itself, it's technically not devotional service, right? Because the consciousness is not. Its power behind it is devotional service, and it'll be a lot more powerful than appreciating the sunset. Right? Because it is Krishna. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like a car. It runs on petrol. So that's why it's running, is because of the petrol. But you'll, people see only the car. You know, you don't say, oh, there's some, that's some good-looking petrol going down the road. No, no, it's like that. You know what I'm saying? So it's because we're used to the form, right? Because everything, the mood needs a form. And the form has to be engaged in activity. Then rasa's taste. So therefore, form's important. Right? So that's why the form takes a prominence. That's not a problem. But, you know, it's only a problem if you think the form is, you know, what is it? Is it the media is the message, right? Then no, then you've missed the point, right? What the media is trying to say, the media is used as the message. It means carries the message. You know what I'm saying? So one has to be able to make this distinction, so that you know then what's being performed is powered by devotional service. You know, but it's not, how do you say, any good is because of its connection with devotional service. But because one doesn't know, therefore one only gets what one knows. That's why if you know Krishna, you get Krishna. You don't know Krishna, you don't get Krishna. It means you get Krishna, but you get him in a form that, you know, you don't know as Krishna. Is that okay? What do you care what the destination is? What's the point? What will you gain by knowing the destination? You know what I'm saying? In other words, the question should be able to, you must be able to apply this in your life. So how are you going to apply this? Someone else, somebody's phone. Not my phone. Connecting them with Krishna, appreciating that they're connecting with Krishna. Okay, so now here's where a problem is coming, will come in. Is that why would you want to connect the deer to Krishna? No, but why a deer? You have a deer? Is any deer around here? Okay, so then any object, that means then you've engaged it in your devotional service. Right? Taking care of the deer is not Bharat Maharaj's service. But because of his situation in devotional service, he could see that this deer needed some, you know, how you say, attention. So he's giving that attention. So in other words, you could say it's appreciating Krishna and appreciating all of Krishna's living entities as devotees of Krishna, then it'll work. But the point is that's not his service. His service is absorption in Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So the point is then what is your service? So therefore, then how to engage everything, connect everything. Because otherwise, one can go off on very, very bad tangents. Right? And the point is know it that we have stated these things and opened the door to this, but if anybody uses it wrong, and especially if they quote me on it, you're not going to see a heavier or stronger reaction from me than if you do it. You know what I'm saying? In other words, the person made a complete mistake in misrepresenting what was said. Does that make sense? Like that. So the point is that we engage everything in it by seeing its connection to Krishna through the potencies that Krishna has given. Then, what are the shastric rules on that potency? And therefore, what are our duties in dealing with that particular manifestation of the Lord? That's how it's engaged. So it always comes back to Shastra. Sentiment's not enough. It can be a springboard. You can take any sentiment that's generated by anything and somehow or another turn it and connect it to Krishna. But then there is a process there. It's not means, in other words, it started from our own self, but that doesn't mean it continues in that way. Right? Oh, I like animals, so therefore I want to keep animals. Great. But the point is now, how are these animals going to be engaged in Krishna service? That's the next thing. Just that you like animals, you take care of animals, you can't say that that's your devotional service unless somehow or another it's connected to Krishna more directly. You know what I'm saying? You appreciate you're nice in that, yes, okay. But that's only going to get you, you know, in your next life as an animal, there'll be a nice person that'll take care of you. That's as good as you get. You know what I'm saying? So then you can see all the things we talk about, they directly come into play. It's not that when we look at it from this vision, all those very hard things that we talk about go away. They're all still there. Birth, death, old age, and disease are still there. They don't go away. You know? Does that make sense? It just means that what is powering everything in the universe, it's not the mundane. It means the living entity's desire to enjoy, of course, is what's making it work. But actually, that's only the desire. But the desire isn't what's doing it. Right? Then it has to go be approved by Krishna, and then the modes, then Maya Devi, through the modes of nature, gets it done. There's the mechanics there. So that's the technical mechanics that are there, but what actually makes it work? Just like you can say the car is working because the steering wheel is connected to this ratchet which connects to that which then turns the wheel, and then that's, you know, got the rubber tire on the ground, and that's got so many particular kinds of grooves and a particular kind of rubber, therefore it stays on the road. Right? You could say that's what's there, but actually it's a manifestation of the person's commitment to that art of driving the car down the road. So the metaphysical means that physical aspect is there. The metaphysical is also there. Then there's the desire behind it. Right? Does that make sense? So we may have this desire, but there's the technical things of the creation of works, but actually it's just Krishna and his energies. There is nothing else other than Radha and Krishna. There isn't anything. All it is Radha and Krishna interacting. But because people can get pretty grungy consciousness, therefore it drops down to their interaction like that. It's very, very... That's why Krishna says just the material energy is just a portion of this... A spark of the splendor, right? Splendor means something very bright. Spark is very small. So that means the spark, the material, whole material world, taking everything, is just a spark compared to the spiritual world. And we're not talking 3-to-1 here. The spark is not 1/4 of the splendor of a fire, right? This is a spark compared to something very great. That's what he said, 4-to-1. 3-to-1. It is, but we're talking about a spark of his splendor means only a spark of his splendor is manifest in 1/4 of the cosmic manifestation. And the splendor is manifest in the 3/4. Does that make sense? Yeah. So there's a fine thing between the form of it, the mechanics of it, the mentality behind it, like this, and then what actually is running everything. So that's why devotees, when they think there's something outside or the karma's got something on us, this is called either ignorance or lack of faith. It's even they're functioning because they're following the Vedic principles. They don't know it. The devotees who say, you know, that they got something, we don't, also don't know it. Right? They're just as ignorant. The only reason it works because it's according to the Vedas. This world only works according to the Vedas. It's nothing else. It's only Krishna's energies coming from Krishna, going back to Krishna. That's all. That's what's going on. Right? Does that make sense? Right? Basically, see, Putana, he accepted the aspect that she approached his mother, but he did kill her because she was acting as a demon. But she was giving some trouble. Right? Does that make sense? So, in other words, there's a mentality behind it, but then there's also what must be done. You know, it's just like, let us say, you're being attacked by someone, they come into a situation and they think you're the one who's done something. Right? So then they attack you physically. So, in their mind, they've done something right, but it doesn't mean that you don't defend yourself and don't correct the situation. Then it can be explained afterwards or this or that, if it can be done. But point is you have the proper vision, but it's not that the person isn't dealt with for what they're doing. You know what I'm saying? There is, it means, we see great kings have established kingdoms just dealing purely on the political or war platform, right? Citizens don't need to be involved. You know what I'm saying? If you look at it, basically speaking, I mean, you always have your low-class things, but if you look at it, up to World War II, where did all the wars happen? In the cities or outside the cities? Outside, all of them. Right? Does that make sense? Only in World War II, then they started fighting in the cities and bombing the cities. Otherwise, the point is you want to take over the country. You want to take over with all its people and opulences and facilities, right? Who wants to take over a pile of rubble? Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, then... I'm sorry, how did we get into that? I'm not sure how we got into that. You remember? Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, we'll go back. Krishna was killing Putana, so it means they're dealt with in the proper way. So therefore, what's improper has to be dealt with in that way, no matter how wonderful they're... In other words, It doesn't matter how wonderful your sentiment is or your purpose is, if it's done wrong, you will get a bad result. Like, do you understand? But because you have the right mentality, if you persevere in that, then you may come across that association by which you can learn a better method to apply it. You understand? That's why the Prabhupada mentions perseverance. A person does the right thing with perseverance, then you're going to get somewhere. Right? Otherwise, you're not going to get somewhere. If his attempt is properly executed with penances and perseverance, then it's sure to be crowned with success. Right? The most intelligent man is he who tries to find the cause of his personal existence and that of the whole cause of creation, and thus tries to find the ultimate cause. Most intelligent man. So therefore, and that includes everybody. So anybody who's trying to figure out who they are intelligent. But because they won't accept God when they get to that point where it's obvious, then it's Maya Pratyajnana. Right? There it is, right in your face. Right? So therefore, you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So someone like you see, so like Einstein, just a straight scientist, people still talk about him. His theories are functioning or not. Some of them say his theories have been thrown out. But people still know Einstein. Right? Isn't it? And who's this other? The wheelchair wallet? Is that Hawkins? Or? Yeah. Who talks about him except for people in the field? Because he's a hardcore atheist. He'll never be known. After he's gone, no one will talk about him. A few scientists will refer to him, but he won't be known, you know, to everybody. Because he refuses to accept the obvious. Right? So therefore, Maya Pratyajnana. His vast intelligence makes him stupid. Right? The other ones know this is the limit of my intelligence. Beyond this, it's God. And they accepted that. They were jnanis. They just wanted to explore, or let's say, what is it? Jigyasus. They just wanted to explore God's creation. It was interesting, intriguing. They wanted to see how God made it work. Right? But that was more important than God, so that's what they stayed at. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, yes, there is a thing there. They're trying to pull it together. The only reason he could pull it together is because one is he's following the proper political path. If you know you have differences here, then you can, by creating a common enemy or a common cause, then you can bring opposing parties together. Right? I mean, it's Afghanistan. How many tribes there are killing each other? They've been doing it for generations, thousands, probably millions of years. That's been their pastime. But and that's they'll go on like that. But then the Russians come in, right? So there, here's the common enemy. They all get together, fight, kick out the Russians. The day the Russians leave, they go back at each other's throat. So you can understand. So the common enemy is the Jews or non-Aryans. Western civilization, like this. So then he pulls his people together. It's a typical political. People use it all the time. Every country uses it. Everybody uses it, down to the housewife. You know, it's you and me, but this lady. You know, they kill each other. But in this situation, they both are on the same side, and this one's different, so they get together against that one. But once they've gotten rid of that one, then they'll kill each other again. But it goes on. It's used. He used it. He was clever at it. He could also understand the difference between the roughness of the pioneers and the refinement of those who could take it forward. He made that conscious. That's why he moved forward. Once he started to get power, then he could see is that his rough tactics, because he had hooligans, and they would go to a political rally of some other party, just go in there and just lay waste to it. So no one else could have a rally. The only ones who could have a rally are him. So then he gained ground. But at some point, once people started to note this, because at first they don't notice it, but when they add two and two and they get four, so then he had to change his whole tactics and then go, because now everybody knew him, now they could go well-dressed and this, and then his, what is it, you know, baby food guy, Goebbels. But yeah, then he started the you know, the whole presentation and all that, and then it was like, you know, hey, this is, you know, so German, you know, and like that big, great, you know, the, you know, they like defined, you know, what is it, Teutonic, you know, it's like, you know, and it just, it worked. So everything they were doing, he was just doing the right thing. That would come from previous pious activities. But at the same time, because he was making some very grave mistakes, extremely grave mistakes, like that. If he hadn't bothered anybody, you know, and if when they reached the old world, you know, pre-world, like the boundaries of the of their empire at the time of the Kaiser, and stopped, you would still have a very large Germany today. But once they walked one, you know, foot over that border, then there was war. So therefore, because of the avariciousness, this, that, this, he could have done his nice little, you know, Aryan thing inside his place and, you know, like that. Told everybody else, you know, sorry, you know, pack your bags, you can all go. And they would have had a nice, you know, little society there. But, so that's where he got it for. For having followed the proper things, that's where he succeeded. But for not following, therefore, Bhutana approached Krishna as a mother. Therefore, she got the benefit of that. But at the same time, mothers don't put poison on their breasts and try to kill their babies. So she got the reaction. You understand? So both can happen at once. Right? Like that. So devotees say, I'm doing devotional service, nothing bad can happen to me. No. If you are here long enough, then yes, you're only doing devotional service, and eventually all the reactions to your previous activities will be gone if you want to wait around the lifetimes for happening. Right? You know, you killed one cow, that means as many hairs on their body, you'll be born in the womb and killed. Okay, that's a lot of births. You know, we're talking about millions and millions of births. So you want to wait that long until all that's burnt up, and then, because you've been doing devotional service the whole time, then everything you do is just perfect, there's nothing wrong anywhere, then you can wait. But where it's recommended, do the devotional service, go back to Godhead, and don't worry about having the perfect situation, you know, heaven on earth, goodwill to men. You know, drop that one. Sounds nice, but, you know, drop it. Is that okay? Yeah, so, in other words, you see the one, but you also see the other. That's the point. If you see the one and don't see the other, that's sentiment. Or you see the other and don't see this one. What do you mean? She came, she tried to kill Krishna, she can't beat her, she can't go. Why was she? She went back there. This is nonsense. You know? So, that's wrong, because no, she did do that aspect. At the same time, you see, oh, well, she was just in the motherly mood, and the other things don't matter, but Krishna did kill her. So it does matter. So that's the difficulty we end up with. The liberal then means that just to take that side, the broad-minded, or that side, and it's just sentiment, because what about the standards? And the other thing, we only take the standards and don't take the human element. So when they both run at the same time, then you can work and you just see which one is balancing on, right? If it's a little more that way, then you bring it this way. A little more this way, you bring it that way. You know, that's how you balance, right? You balance something, you put something on there and you keep moving it to keep it in balance. So it's dynamic. So that's why Prabhupada's on the same situation, just like out of Bombay, there were two groups of devotees going into South India to preach. There was nothing in South India at that time. Like that. So, to one party, he said, only eat fried foods. You know, things that are cooked in heat. Don't eat anything, that's just boiled. Anything kacha. Means, in other words, in the Indian definition, paka means it's cooked in ghee, and kacha means it's not cooked in ghee. Kacha we call uncooked. Rice is kacha. Chapatis are kacha. Dal is kacha. Because we cook it first and then put the ghee in afterwards. Right? Paka means you put it first. So he told one party, only eat paka food. He told the other party, only eat kacha food. Now, paka food carries no karma, kacha food does. So why would he say to the one party, take kacha, and the other one, take paka? Because the one he told, take paka, they had been in India for many years and all that, and so they could handle it, and that way then they could avoid, you know, any, you know, thing coming from the consciousness. The others were new in India, and if they ate paka food, they you know, they get diarrhea and run back to the West. Their preaching would stop. Better the preaching goes on and they're eating kacha food. Right? Does that make sense? So, like that, then. Same situation. Same, they were both sannyasis, they were both taking a party to South India, they were both leaving from Bombay. But two completely different instructions. So, like that, then. Said, but there's everything's already organized. There's nothing for me to do. And Prabhupada said, just that you are here, everything will go nicely. Like that. That's the same one he told about the kacha, and I think the other one he told, you know, go out, is the one he told about the paka. Prominent is what you're called by. But Uttama is distinguished from the other in that they're not conditioned.
They have no
No.
It's
100%. Yeah, I mean, it depends upon how you're classifying this, what you're considering. Right? Because someone in the beginning stages of the Bhava, you could say, is the kanista side of the, you know, the, how you say, the Uttamadikaris. Someone who has crossed into Apandas, then you can say that the Madhyama of that. Someone who's crossed into Prema, you could say, is the Uttama of that. Same way you could say as impure devotees, then the madhyamas are the neophytes of that, the uttamas are the madhyams of that, and the rosa and prema are the uttams of that. So it's just how you're defining it. It's the perspective. But the point is, it's what's prominent, that's what's important. Not that they have the qualities, no, what's prominent. It means if you didn't have some taste, why would you be doing devotional service? Right? But it's not ruchi, because that's not the prominent element. Prominent element, maybe you're just generating your faith in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, it's called shraddha. Or you're taking up the association of devotees, and that's the prominent thing in your consciousness. You want to go be with the devotees, or the devotees are going on Harinam, or doing this. So you're new, so you're doing that. So therefore, it's sadhusanga. Right? It's not that then the faith is not there. No, faith is there, it grows. But these are the good qualities that are all there, and they go throughout. And anything from the future is also there. But the negative qualities by which we define the neophyte, meaning the prakrita, means that they are doing what they want to do, and then that's connected to Krishna. Rather than the madhyama is doing what is natural for the conditioned nature for Krishna. Yeah, but that's there. But I'm saying if I can also do it, it has to be done. I'm saying this, the natural state is that the neophyte is, this is what I want to do, therefore I'm doing it for Krishna. The madhyama is, this is what my conditioned nature is, therefore that's going to be the best thing to do for Krishna. The uttama is, I just want to serve Krishna. Then you look back at it, so therefore this is the nature that is there, therefore I'll do that for Krishna. Like that. So the madhyama uttama is just kind of reverse, same thing, you reverse the thing. The neophyte is actually different. So the madhyama and the uttama are actually very close together. The neophytes, in general, we try to take it that the neophyte and the madhyama are here, and there's a big gap, and there's the uttama. The gap's between the madhyama and the neophyte. Just like in Varnashram, you know, we tend to try to put the gap between the Vaishya and the Shudra. It's actually between the Kshatriya and the Vaishya. That's where the big gap is. But Vaishya's got all the money, you got to keep him on this side, so that's where you put the gap on that side. Right? You know, a world where the Vaishya's act independent from the Brahmins and Kshatriyas is a bad place. It's called the bourgeois culture, right? Or the capitalist culture, or the consumerist culture. So one can see the effect when they don't bother with the others. That makes sense. Yes, wasn't that, you know, wasn't like when, what's her name? Revati's father visited Lord Brahma to get, you know, which king to choose for his daughter, and he started laughing. Those kings are gone a long time ago. Yeah, no, it's because it's in the experience. You know what I'm saying? But no, it's like this. You're driving in a car, right? And in the back seat are all the, you know, kids, right? And they go, how long till we're there? How long till we get there? 3 hours. Then 30 seconds later they go, are we there yet? No, we still have, you know, 2 hours, 59 minutes, and 30 seconds. Like that. And then another would be sick. Are we there yet? Right? Because for them, you know, one moment feels like 12 years or more. Right? Because that's the point. It's the experience. It's not actually the length of the time. So if we said that, you know, you're in this situation and let's say you're in a nice situation for 5 minutes, then if you're so worried that it's only going to be 5 minutes, so therefore you don't even actually appreciate the 5 minutes. You walk away with basically nothing. Oh, if it only could have been more than 5 minutes, and I couldn't really enjoy it because it was so short. And there was no enjoyment. Right? The person who's not, doesn't know it's only 5 minutes, that 5 minutes goes by, they had 5 minutes of happiness. Afterwards they go, that was nice, you know, short, but it was really good. Right? But if you extended that 5 minutes where in your perception you could walk away with the lifetime, I mean the night of Brahma, it would have a very deep effect, a very deep meaning. So that's what's important. Time, on the spiritual platform, time is there just for the pastimes. That's why it says that there's no time in the spirit. There's no time or space. But things appear to be going by time, and things appear to have space, but they don't. Otherwise, you know, the element of the lotus is opening and closing, and just they start walking here and then they're there. But they don't see that, oh, here goes the lotus, and whoops, here we go, you know, like that. No, it's not like that. It's just you walk and you're there. Because you're just absorbed in Krishna and the cows, therefore they just go out with the cows and then they're at the other side of Braja. Does that make sense? So
That's the point. It's just the time, how it's experienced. Because the point is experience is what you're trying to get. That's the rasa. A particular observable result, that's secondary. Right? Because the dative, I mean, the subjective and subjective and the objective, they're the ones that are interacting over the verb, right? So the action's going on between the subject and the object, right, through the verb. The dative's another case. The dative's the result, right? You understand? The dative's the result, the accusative is dative is separate, accusative is second, locative is separate. Does that make sense? So why you're doing it, what is the result of doing it, where are you doing it, that actually isn't as important as the experience generated by the action. Does that make sense? Yes. But it's not just relegated to that, oh, it's just a feeling. No, it was a night of Brahma. Because that depth of experience was a night of Brahma. And the time can be there, because in the spiritual platform, it doesn't matter. So therefore, it can expand, and they were actually physically one night of Brahma dancing. But at the same time, then time pulls it back, and then it goes out here. You know? So, you know what I'm saying? It's just like you're there and then you see this whole situation and it's just a moment. You see something and, oh, that's going to cause this and that's going to cause that, and then all this is going to fall apart and then so many things will happen, this and that, and then you take a way down the road, but then it all happened in the flash. You know what I'm saying? So here, means the time fits within the time, though the experience is there. But in the spiritual world, time doesn't work like that. Time works what's nice for Krishna. So if Krishna likes this, then the night's just longer. And those other ones, then, so it can all go on at the same time. The night was still just, the regular, 5-6 hours they were together, but at the same time as, well, actually more, 8 hours. They were together, but at the same time as they were, it was that long. So that means the two have to be able to simultaneously be experienced. So it's not a matter of, okay, so then according to, the scientific analysis, then it was just, okay, it was just a regular night, but their experience is a night of Brahma, so I can accommodate that. No, both were there. Because the point is the experience is important. The reason the other person is that time is important to them. They figured that, so it's an identity, it's a security. So now if by this time is messed up, then where do I stand? My identity becomes lost. You know what I'm saying? So there's an insecurity in being able to accept it. But if we accepted that the spiritual world, we are from the spiritual world, though we're conditioned here, we're trying to get there. The spiritual world works like this. So therefore, the spiritual world is manifesting in the Gokul pastimes in its own natural way, as opposed to, dealing with a demon walks in and then everything around that demon's working on just regular, mundane, chronology. So it's fine. We can accommodate them both. Then it does. There's no insecurity, because one security is there, not here. Does that make sense? Then it makes it very easy to accommodate these things. But otherwise, then there'll always be the thing is it has to be there, it has to be provable, it has to be fact. And generally that'll be generated from a lack of security because of lack of trust. Right? Because you want it in your control. So therefore, then I can tell it goes like this, okay, then it's okay, it fits within my intelligence, therefore it's okay. But why does it have to fit in your intelligence? We're talking about the mind. And so it becomes a problem because the mind has been cheated. If you tell kids this, this principle I could explain to a 5-year-old kid, no problem. And they would accept it, they could go with it. Any kid from any culture of the world, you could take it 4 or 5 years old, 3 years old, explain to about the demigods, about Krishna, about, the rakshasas and flying into space, it would be fine for them, no problem at all. It's the adults that they have to, you know, be able to explain everything, and they got to know what the crop circle is, you know, and all these different things. You know, they just have to know everything and what's going on, because their existence as they know it is threatened. But for the kids, they don't really think in time and stuff like that. It hasn't really hit them yet. They haven't understood that unless you have are able to at least accommodate and work with the mundane viewpoint, you're going to be in trouble. You're going to suffer in this world. You have to be able to discriminate. Make the difference. For the kids, they couldn't care less what color you are. Right? Little kids, you put them all together like that, all different colors. To them, it's, you know, it's like jelly beans. You know, they're all, of course they're different colors. You know, like that. Your socks are different colors. Kids are different colors. What's the big deal? Ice cream's different colors, right? So like that, it's a natural. So these are problems generated by the conditioning, the adults, like that. Kids really don't have any problem with these things, like that. No, in little kids it doesn't matter, right? It doesn't matter. To kids, it absolutely doesn't matter. I mean, Krishna's friends are all different colors. Some are green, some are red, some are gold, some are black, some are, you know, it just doesn't matter to them. Yeah. That's all. It's just like the phenomena of where you have an animal that somehow knows born or wasn't with its mother and grew up with other animals. They think they're that animal. And like you had a dog growing up with a, you know, I don't know what it, I forget what it was, but there's some famous examples of that, you know. I can't remember what it was. It was something that was very ferocious, and it grew up with something docile. So even when it was in a rough situation, it would go and hide like whatever it was that it was with. Right? And they had to train it that, no, you know, you're a lion or something. You know, it thought it was a duck. I mean, something like that. It was a very funny thing. So they just do, you know. So it's that's not an uncommon thing. That's not the problem. Kids are kids. I mean, every kid looks different. They have different color hair, different this, and they've got freckles. Somebody doesn't, you know. So nobody cares. As it is, you know, you got mucus filin air, like that, three, and then those by three, so you can have there, you know, nine different main kinds. Okay, the planets are actually different kinds. They're actually technically different. Or you take Brahmacharya, they're different, you know, but they kids have no problem. That's there because they're conditioned, but they don't mean they couldn't, they don't care if they power play with a white one or a black one or a yellow one or a green one, they couldn't care less. You know, it's just they're the best, so that's all. The same form as Lord means liberation. Sayuja, I mean Swarupya. It means that you look exactly the same as the Lord. Forearm form, look exactly the same. Same color, same everything. The only difference is the Srivatsa. That's the only way you can tell the difference between those devotees in Vaikuntha and Vaikuntha Nath himself. It's the white hair. That's it. You know, it stand out on the black body. It would stand out, you'd notice it. Raj, yeah, they're all different colors. The girls are generally all golden. Like that, that's the, they're all golden. Like that. The Krishna's black. Most of the others are golden. Like that, that's why they joke about them. They use it in a nice way, as he's black, because the gopis, because they use kajal on their eyes, and they're always seeing him and taking him into their hearts through their eyes, so when he goes past their eyes, and he gets the black from the kajal. So, they'll use it in that way. They'll also say, ah, you're black, you're different. And the Mother Yashoda's not black. You know, where did you come from? You're not from here. You know, like that. So they'll razz them in that way. You know? So it goes. So it's used there as discrimination for rasa. It's not used, it's used to enhance. It's not used otherwise. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like you get, you know, two blacks come together, right? You know, you know, this and that, you know. So then, usually, but it's to enhance the relationship. It's not otherwise. you know, if a white guy comes up and says, you know, yo, you know, he's got problems. You know, so, like that. You know, so it's like, you gotta be. So in other words, the intelligence is there to enhance rasa. But that's as long as the mind is properly situated. When the mind is not properly situated, you have to use the intelligence to break the position of the mind. Right? Attachment's not the problem. But if it's attached to the wrong thing, you have to use the intelligence to break the attachment and reconnect it to the proper attachment. Breaking the old attachment is not enough. Devotees do that a lot in that they break the attachment for their old culture, but they don't replace it with the, you know, the Vedic culture. So then at some point they gotta go back. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is you're trying to adjust it. So that technique is only used when the mind is not situated properly. Like that. You know what I'm saying? So to do that, then you have to make the one look bad and the other look good, because mind just accepts and rejects. So it's accepted the wrong one and is rejecting the good one. So you have to make the bad one look bad and the good one look good. So then it will switch. But once it's actually switched, then you can use that broadness in looking at others. You understand? Does that make sense? Otherwise, then it has its limitations, this us and them principle. It's useful, and it's used in rasa if the situation is nice. You know, it's like, oh, Krishna the Catholic boys and us the gopis. So then in holding, there's a war, you know. But it's all to please Krishna. You know, it's the boys against the girls. Like that. You know what I'm saying? So knows it. But in other times, when it's like making arrangements for Krishna, then it's the boys and the girls work together to make arrangements for Krishna. Understand? So just depending upon the situation, that difference is made. Right? So if the consciousness is common, then the difference creates the rasa. But if the consciousness is not common, then the difference, where is the rasa? There's nothing common. Right? Only when there's subject and object, then there's rasa. If there's only subject, where's the rasa? Right? Krishna is one. Where's the rasa? Krishna is two. Now there's rasa. Understand? So you have to have the two, but they have the common point has to be the one, the verb. Right? Right? And who's affecting the verb? The subject. Yeah, that's nice. Then you take that verse and append it in the epilogue. So anytime he gives those definitions and you see that, then it can be, we can put underneath it the verse. So then, wait. Is that okay? Yes. How do we understand that someone means what Krishna is saying, someone doesn't perfect his life in Krishna consciousness, so someone who is in Krishna consciousness for a long time and doesn't go back to God, who takes birth in the family and practicing devotees. But then, if we use the techniques of regression, sometimes we see some agyata sukriti. One is, who's doing the regression? Right? Two, is the process of regression, is it actually what it says it is? You know what I'm saying? I mean, it means not doubting that there's something in there, but the point is how does one know the chronology? You know what I'm saying? It's like human lives means which one that you happen to pick. They just go, they previous life, so they just take it that it means the one just before this. They could have gone back 10, 100, 1,000. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't have to be, and they also take it that it's going to be within this last 5,000 years of history. But, you know, it could have been the last Kali Yuga or the Kali Yuga before. Right? Someone does something, he goes to hell for the nonsense. Then he takes birth exactly in the same position that he was in before. Probably would look the same, similar name, similar everything. So that it's the same, did he learn anything? Or is he just going to make the same mistake? That's why Jenna says millions of lifetimes. The yogis are drilling the breath in that, because they're in the same situation. So, you know, in other words, you know, how do you say, Uncle Sanders is, you know, he's going to have, you know, come back and then see if he starts that chicken restaurant again and then sells the franchise, you know, to someone else, you know, and, you know, like that, you know, then the next life and the next color. Because then he's something like that, depending on how bad it is, you may be back soon or you may have to wait till the next Kali Yuga. Or some of them may have to wait a few Kali Yugas before they're back. But, you know, because it's like, sometimes you can be in a bad situation for one term of Yamaraj, which is 772, you know, stretches of Kali Yugas, 72 Mahayugas. You know what I'm saying? So someone goes, they don't even make it to Yamaraj. Right? The Yamadutas bring him down to the Vaitarani River, which is a river that's separate, that you have to cross to get to the court. And they're so sinful that they go, they have to swim because they haven't done that particular rite to get a boat. Right? For the Karmakandis, they have to do a ritual. They give a cow in charity to a Brahmin and some gold and all that. That's why they put the gold coins in the eyes. Like when they burn the body, is that those are the coins that pay the boatmen to get you across. No coins, no boat, you swim. Right? You know, it's pretty practical. So then they get there, they have to swim, but the river doesn't take on a nice form because they're so sinful. So it's full of all kinds of these, you know, how you say, fish, aquatics that have these super razor sharp fins. Not piranhas necessarily. Piranhas is teeth. These are just, they swim by. You know, and so you cut this, that, and so in that you sink. And then you sink down into the bottom of that. And you stay there until the next Yamaraj. This Yamaraj won't even deal you with it. So now this person, now next life, then he goes to hell for so long, then he goes to so many species of life. Then he finally makes it back and takes birth there again. And then, so they're thinking they regress them, but that's the last life. But the last life was probably them, as they were. So exactly how it works, it's not a scientific process. That's one. That's if the person has, you know, is able to keep the door shut and they're able to do anything. But who knows about those things? So therefore, the person's mind and the room is completely open to anybody walking by. So they've done regressions and the person's talking and they're having very, you know, solid conversations and this and who are you and I'm this and I'm that, what do you do and so many things, and they go through the whole thing. And then they find out that the person's in a coma in a hospital just down the street. You know, and this is one of their regular regressions. And then they go over to the hospital and find out, yeah, as the person checked the history, it's exactly as they said. So the person in his coma was out on a stroll and just, hey, this looks like fun, you know, and stepped in, you know, like that. And then, so, who knows that all the people you're talking to aren't walk-ins? You know what I'm saying? They could all be. Like that. So, therefore, it's not a very developed process. May not be so advanced. Okay, so those born in the family of Vaishnavas may not seem so advanced. Okay, so then there'll also be the distinguishing factor is if we may breach the highly politically incorrect topic of that a child takes on the consciousness of his parents at the time of conception. So therefore, if the parent's consciousness were a bit low, then of devotees who have done long service, they may get ones who have more material attachments. Right? And someone whose consciousness is higher at that point, right, then they might attract ones who are more developed in consciousness. Like this. But you have to remember this is politically incorrect, and I never said this. Because it can start one of the biggest, you know, how you say, fights of, how you say, false ego amongst parents, because somehow at the moment of conception they all think they're doing a fabulous job, right? Just as their wife got pregnant, they considered that, you know, perfection. So it doesn't matter anything else. So it's not a topic to discuss like that. So that's one thing. Two is, let us look at it from another angle. I've noted myself, at least, the second generation, Krishna consciousness is their culture. It's just a matter of whether they want to follow it or not. Well, the first generation does have another culture that sometimes when things get rough in Krishna consciousness, they return to as their culture. But you see, as the devotee kids, very rare anybody goes out, you know, and really just goes for it. I mean, I saw one the other day in one movie, like that, some Radha from Australia. Huh? Radha Mitchum. Some say she's not a devotee. Her mother was a little bit, you know, interested in the devotee, so she named the kid Radha. Some say that she was this one. I don't know. She doesn't seem to really care. So there's a few that go way out there, but mostly, as you see, is they get into their wild culture, but with other like-minded second-generation kids. Because most second-generation I talk to, they think the karmas at school are pretty dull. You know, they don't know about reincarnation, they don't know about the body, I mean, they're really fat ants, you know, they just associate with the other devotees. So they want to do all kinds of nonsense and do with other kids, other devotee kids and do nonsense. But the culture is Krishna consciousness. So they're in a different category. That's one thing. Then another manifestation is, oh, go ahead, what's the question? Long time. Long time means is that they're steady in devotional service. So how long they're steady in devotional service? So someone's steady for a few years, someone's not. In other words, if the devotional service, they became steady in it, then that would put them, they wouldn't go to the heavenly planets. They go, because they're not really interested, they go straight into the family of devotees. But devotees who are more distracted by their facilities and enjoyment and other things like that in the day identity, they'll go to the heavenly planets because you can't get that really good here. Houses can only be so good here. You know, ornaments only so good. Your physical, you know, how you look like is only so good. And it only looks so good for so long. But up there, it's pretty good, you know, as far as here goes. But up there, because everyone looks good, then still it's within who looks good, who looks better. You know, there's always someone who looks better, and their house is a little bit better than yours, and their car is a little bit better than yours, and their ornaments are a little bit better than yours, and, you know, so it's the same experience of jealousy and envy, and, you know, it will be there. Nothing different. It's just that, you know what I'm saying? It's just like if you go to the ghetto, they have their, you know, hot girls and good-looking boys, and if you go to the other end of the social scale, they got theirs. Everybody has, so. So, but in any case, it's a nicer facility and there's no pain, you know, at least physical problems. Mental, you take with you. What can you do? You change bodies, you can change that, but the mind goes with you, so you can't do much about that. So Krishna arranges a nice situation. Having been there, then they come back here, and then hopefully then they'll, having satisfied them, and take up more seriously the devotional process. That's why then they're born into, you know, Brahmin families, aristocratic families, like this, religious families. And so depending upon what was their determination, then it'll be, you know, your Brahmin families will be one, then religious, then aristocratic. So depending upon what was more important for them, like that. concerning that. But the but then you'll also see is like you have a karmi, a general karmi, and let's we're gonna give as an example the karmis, and we're gonna reflect that onto the into the devotee situation. Okay, let us take a successful karmi, and let us take a non-successful karmi. Okay, means materially not successful. As far as their focus goes, because focus is necessary, focus, endeavor, and dependence on the Supreme is the important element that gets anything done. What's the difference between the focus of the successful person and the non-successful person? Can anyone say? More focus, it's more specific, right? It's one pointed, they're less distracted. So, therefore, they get farther. It's the karma means if the, and every endeavor means it's their karma that they will be focused. Understand? Have the ability to be focused is also karma. Like that. But by intelligence you can generate it because you know that's something there's a process. In other words, through austerity, then you can create something. So then their focus means they have less distraction. So let us say the common person, they have 100 desires and they don't know what to do. And the successful person only has a few and they know their priorities. So therefore they go after this, then when there's time they do the next one, then they do the next one, and they have a few things. You know, they got their job and position, they've gotten their, they, as soon as they get money, they invest in, you know, facilities, they are buying houses, they start, you know, investing like that, and then they get a little bit more, and as they're situated, then they'll start enjoying it. You know, and then that enjoyment, you know, can't just be anything but specific, you know, it's either on a yacht or a fancy place, you know, nice location, or, you know, they go to, what do you call it? Ibiza? Right? I always thought they were saying we're going to eat pizza. But it's we're going to Ibiza, right? So whatever. So then they're you know, something like that. And therefore it works. And then if you know, situation is such, business needs a thing, they won't go on vacation, they won't be buying houses, they'll be doing the business and investing. So they have a few things, and they prioritize it very well, and they stick to it. So therefore they're successful. And the person who has so many doesn't know. Okay, but now you'll see is what they do go after, they're very focused on. Right? So if they think, you know, drinking and womanizing on a yacht is important, they do that with panache. Right? They get the best wines, the best yacht, the best girls, and try to have the best time. Right? And they're really focused. Well, the other, well, should we go here and there and like that? And well, that looks like a nice girl. Should I go over and talk to her? Or maybe not. And what if she rejects me? And this and that. So nothing happens. Right? The other one just goes, wow, that's a nice girl. Walks over and just starts a conversation. You understand? So does that make sense, the two? That is very logical. Okay. So now, let us take that and reflect that into devotional service. So someone who is focused or steady in devotional service means, does he have lots of things that distract him or only a few? Right? So now let us take this exactly into your point. If you'll notice the Hare Krishna kids that are born in the movement, how many anarthas do they have? It's a very focused few. You'll notice they're very specific. That's why you can tell that they were someone who's been a long time rather than the instant. That's it. That's the thing that brought them back. That's why they didn't go attaching to the family or attaching to a particular position or sense gratification or it's the one thing or that small group of things. They've cleared thousands of things, but these ones they haven't. So that's why they took birth again. And that's why sometimes it looks like the Krishna kids are crazy. You know, complete gross materialists, because they're focused on those things. So, by association and all these things, you get them involved in the devotional process, then they'll start to clear those, and then they go back to God. Nitya. Is that okay? Is that clear, everybody? Yeah. Time, okay. That's East Coast. West Coast is 11. Yes, we're ahead. Yes. That's a good point. I like that. I like that. That's a good point, yeah. Yeah, you talk to somebody on the West Coast, if you talk to them in the morning, it's there yesterday. There yesterday. It's a good point. I like that. Oh, that's good. I like that. They always have some explanation, those guys. You have to give them credit, you know, like that. That you see them. Yeah. No, that's a nice one. I like that. You understand the point? You know, on different parts of the planet, somebody's ahead in time and somebody's behind in time. For example, we're here in India and then in America, so they're X amount of hours behind or X amount ahead. And it's accepted like that. So you can say ahead and behind. But if we talk to each other on the phone, we're talking in the present. Even though one's ahead and one's behind. Yeah. It's points like this that aren't fully understood that the screenwriters get a hold of and then they make movies out of them. You know? Like you have the guy, he comes back from the future to have sex with his mother to have himself. You know, yeah. They could have had a friend or something, but, you know, whatever. But, yeah, whatever. They do these things with these bits. You know. Yeah, they get a glimpse of something. During the time of the Mahabharata, is that what you said? Okay. Was the whole planet Bharatvarsha? Yeah, no, the whole planet is Bharatvarsha. See, is Bharatvarsha, there's Bharatakanda. Bharatvarsha is the whole planet. Bharatakanda is basically from the is Aryabharata. You know, it's basically from the, what do you call it? The Indian, is it the Arabian Ocean? What do you call it over Bombay, Gujarat, that side? Arabian Sea, yeah, from the Arabian Sea to the Indian Ocean, the Bay of Bengal, and between the Vindhyas and the Himalayas. That's Aryabharata. And so then that's basically, they count the whole thing within India as where the Ganga flows, is that's Bharatakanda. Right? Then you're on the north side or south side of the Ganga. Right? So like that, then they'll do the, when they do the Sankalpas, then they do according to that. Because even the culture in south came from the north. Agastya Muni, he took it down there. Right? He introduced Tamil, he took the Brahmins from the north, he did all these kind of things. So then everything was established. From, you know, the Bharatakanda. Like that. The Bharatvarsha is the whole thing, but then as people give up the Vedic culture, then it becomes smaller. Right? So now it's down to, I mean, just, you know, what, 60 years ago, then it included, you know, Pakistan and Bangladesh. And you go back another some years, it also included Burma. And when the British came to India, Burma, Bangladesh, and Pakistan were all part of India. And then the British, Burma was too much of a problem, so they separated it off like that. And then, you know, to give problem to India, then they separated off Pakistan and Bangladesh. Say again. Maharaj Yudhishthira. Did they rule the whole planet? Yes. But, you know, you have your tribal kings who take care of the outback, you know, like that. So, in other words, the emperor rules the kings, and the kings rule the planet. Does that make sense? That was Arjuna going north. That's the northern gurus. Because that means then you're going up Meru, so you can't. But it's beyond Gandhamanda. That's the only one that I know of. Other ones went. One went. I'm not sure who went where. I think Arjuna went down across the bottom of the Himalayas, down into Lake Manipur and those things, and then back up, and then up to the north, and then down. Then I think Bhima went over kind of like, you know, Bengal and those places there. Then Nakula, he went out west, you know. And then Sahadev went straight down the south. So it's kind of like, you know, it's taken the whole south, and the kind of the east, and the north, and then the west. And the west that I know of, they would have gone out to the sands. Because that's kind of where it would end. After that, it gets too far. Like, basically, because in the Satyuga, the main kind of like central area of activity would be kind of more towards the Caspian Sea, the Central Asian Caspian Sea up there, because they just stay in the hills and that. Then in the Treta Yuga, then it's more prominent down in the flatlands, because then whole Varnashrams manifest. Before that, it's basically sages, so it will be up there. But it's the same culture, everything's it's all connected, just that that's where the prominent focus is. Then it will come down. So basically you could say it's your Central Asia, and then Central Asia down into Persia, Iran, and there over, and then it would go, you see it strong, it goes as far as like Thailand, Cambodia, like that, and then down into Indonesia. Is that Sumatra? That's also, it's part of the Vedic culture, though they're tribals, but like that. Like all the Khmers and all that, they're all tribals, but they follow the Vedic culture. So that would have been your kind of more, you could say, dynamically practicing where they would see the connection to the Veda. But they may be practicing it according to their own standards or own interpretations or misinterpretations. But once you kind of like cross the sands into then the Middle East, and then you go north into Europe and like over into China and that, then they're still following the culture, but it's become so far away and we call it something separate, right? You know, generally when they historically discuss some of these others, the connection, they're talking about Vedic culture, but this is like Egyptians, its own culture, you know, and the Druids, its own culture, and then the Chinese, its own culture, and that. Though it's still its basis is within the Vedic. But the connections are lost. Well, these other ones, the connections are there. You know, like I taught one Ayurvedic Chinese man, Ayurvedic doctor, and I was talking about, because he knew a Hare Krishna, so therefore, you know, Hindu, India. And he said 2,500 years ago, then the Chinese medicine was Ayurvedic. But then, no, excuse me, before 2,500 it was all Ayurveda, and then after 2,500 years, they dropped using the Sanskrit mantras. they stopped using Sanskrit mantras. And then in that time, naturally, it would just, you know, develop in a specific area. But he says before that, it was just straight Ayurveda. And then, that was one. Yeah, you see, in Kazakhstan, then one of the scholars, you know, in, I think in religion or something there, was saying that the present mosques are built on the foundations of Buddhist stupas, which are built on the foundations of Hindu temples. Like that. So it's just, you know, one comes in, knocks the others down, and then builds their thing. You know, like that. So that was there. Maybe there was another one, I can't remember. Yeah, and they say that they used to worship these black stones. Like that. You know, that was the religion. You know, the Kazakh religion was the worship of these black stones. Then Buddhism came in. Oh yeah, that was another one. It said in Thailand, the king's priest, the family priest, then he said that previously we were all Hindus, because in the king's personal temple, it's not in the palace, it's outside the palace. Then they have Radha Krishna deities. There's also Shiva deities, there's also so many Buddha deities. And then in the next temple next to it, there's a Ganesh deity, though in ruins, and I forget what the last one is. And I asked, well, how is this Radha Krishna worship, you know, and Shiva worship? He says, because before we were all Hindus. Then when Ashok, you know, and then established Buddhism, then we became Buddhists. Then Shankaracharya came, and then he kicked Buddhism out of India, but he stopped there. So we remained Buddhist, and India went back to Hinduism. So that's why we still have Hindu deities. You know, because they've been worshipping him since that time. So those Radha Krishna deities have been there for some thousands of years. So, you know, like that. Interesting. So in other words, in a lot of these cultures, they accept the connection. Well, some of them don't. The Egyptians, they can't see the connection. The Druids, it's not seeing the connection. You know, the whole Celtic culture. Noticed some coma and then something about Cortez. That lots of devotees become homeopath doctors. Okay. Does homeopathy come from Ayurveda? Homeopath, then he explained that just like an allopath, they take the essence out of a particular herb and use it, but they have their way of doing it, but they do the same thing. But he said it was based on Ayurveda. But its application in the present, there's no reference to Ayurveda or anything. All they know is that this herb works on this disease. Stuff, but they actually don't know the balance of the mucus bilayer there and those things. But it seems that originally, because it was some German gentleman, he got the concept. But I was told that it was pulled from the Ayurveda. So many things come out of there. Naturopath comes from there, but they just use the fasting part of it. Siddhavaidya idea comes from there, but they don't use the herbs, they only use minerals and metals. Right, means Ayurveda uses herbs, minerals and metals, and poisons. Right? So then, how do you say it? Then like your... Yeah. So Siddhava idea only uses metals. That means in other words, herbs are goodness, metals are passion, poisons are ignorance. Basically, like your Western medicine only uses poison. You know? Then the naturopath, then they just use, even if they don't, they try to keep them more sattvic. The one other one uses rajas. So they take different parts. Does that make sense? It works, it's easy, you can get it quick, you know how to use it, you get something like that. But not very many use it well like that. I've seen two or three that can use it very well. Most don't, probably the quacks, you know, because most don't know what they're doing at all. You get the books, you read it, and you think you know it. Like that. And then even within the homeopathy, there's the 12 salts. You know, it's reduced it down to that, and then I think this Bach flower thing is a branch off of that, and then there's another branch with some other thing. So another, it's like the Bach flowers, but it's some other kind of essence, but it's, I think it's from somewhere else. Huh? Yeah, it's an Australian thing, they got one, and you know, so each derives off of another, and they're all derivatives. But it's the only, if it works, it's only because it's a particular, you know, indirect connection to the Ayurveda. It means it's following the principle of Ayurveda, that's why it works. If it's not following, it won't work. If you're going to go to the trouble of spending 4 years to learn a system, why not learn Ayurveda? If you just buy the book and spend 2 weeks and then start using it for your kids, homeopathy is pretty good. Say again. To be treated. If you have means, the point is find a doctor who can do the job. So if you have a good Ayurvedic doctor, great. If you don't, find someone else. You know what I'm saying? That's it. Okay, so people are done here. I haven't had a long yet.
Oh,
I guess it's just this season. It's kind of like from now to the festival. Then there's more devotees and they talk in there. Because after, then there's nobody. Right. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samadita Bhakti Vrinda ki, Jai Nitai Guru. Sometimes you don't want to become into a thing, otherwise you take it the other way and then it loses its. So that's why it's these things are mentioned, but they're not necessarily caught.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that. It's right there, Prabhupada says. Whether it's personal, impersonal, localized, or personal, it's all devotional service. They're controlling the senses for understanding the Supreme.
Mm-hmm.
And meditating on the Supreme, so it's devotional service. But the point is because they don't know it's devotional service, therefore they only get how much it is.
Yeah.
Like that. And then, you know, specifically, but we don't call it agata sukriti. We, you know, it is devotional, but it's powered by that. But it doesn't. There's no devotional content. Agata Sukriti, when those who know what is devotional service apply something on people who don't know, that's Agata Sukriti. And then when someone performs an activity that's devotional, knowing it's devotional, then you call it devotional service. So you know, all three are powered by devotional service, but one gives no devotional effect, the other one gives a cumulative devotional effect, and the other one gives direct devotional effect.
Thank you.